Follow along with me as I read Psalm 61. It says, "Hear my cry, O God. Attend to my prayer. From the ends of the earth I will cry to you. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. For you have been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in your tabernacle forever. I will trust in the shelter of your wings. For you, O God, have heard my vows. You have given me the heritage of those who fear your name. You will prolong the king's life, his years as many generations. He shall abide before God forever. O, prepare mercy and truth which may preserve him. So I will sing praise to your name forever, that I may daily perform my vows." A few years ago, the Lord gave me an opportunity to firsthand see a lot of tragedy and despair in a very short period of time. All of the instances I'm about to share with you happened in 1 month period, and the Lord allowed me to be a part of it. The first was a woman who came to me in absolute despair because her daughter had died. Her daughter's name was Andrea, and she began to tell me the story of how Andrea, as a young girl, was just wonderful. She was full of life. She did extremely well in school, but when she became a teenager, she got involved in the wrong crowd. She began hanging out with the wrong people. She got involved in drugs. That drug use, which was casual at first, suddenly became an addiction. And by the time she was in her mid-20s, she was completely addicted to many different drugs. And at 26 years old, Andrea committed suicide. And now her mom is telling me the story in utter devastation. The following week, I met a family of another girl, a girl by the name of Lisa. Now, Lisa was only 29 years old when she decided to take her life. She was a girl who had been battling with mental illness for many, many years. At times, that mental illness just brought her into just utter... I'm having a little trouble with my microphone. Give me a second here. In utter depression, which would just be crushing in her life. Other times, it would just throw her in a tailspin that would lead her into doing crazy things. And by the time she had turned 29 years old, she had had enough of this illness. She didn't want to live with it anymore. And so she also decided to take her life. Only 1 week passed after that when a person who I had gotten to know, his name was Matthew, died in the hospital. He had contracted a very deadly form of meningitis. And it took the doctors a very, very long time to even diagnose him. And during that time period, I would go and visit him in the hospital, and there would be his wife and his three children by his bedside, loving on him, ministering to him, praying fervently that he would get well. But by the time the doctors actually gave the right diagnosis, his situation was very grave, and 4 months after his initial hospitalization, he passed away. What made this extra tragic was the fact that only weeks before he had first entered the hospital with this illness, he and his wife had adopted a teenage son, a boy who they were trying to help out of a very horrible life situation. He had never truly had a father, but they wanted to adopt him as their own, and so they did. And it was only weeks after that he ended up in the hospital, never getting out of that hospital. And that boy who had finally had a dad, suddenly had that dad taken away from him. And then the week after that, a family in the church I was attending at that time came to me and said, "Can you please come with us right now? One of our neighbors, we just found out, committed suicide." So I went with them to their neighborhood, and as we are going, they are beginning to tell me the story about who she was. And then in the middle of them telling me about her, I suddenly realized, I know this lady. She's a friend of mine. Her name was Tammy. Tammy was 44 years old. And I knew her enough to know that she had gone through a terrible time for several years in her life. She had gone through a divorce, many other life-altering situations. And at that point in her life, though, she was beginning to turn a corner. Things were getting a lot better. She had established a new career, and I really felt like she was on the right track. But evidently, underneath the surface of things going well in her life, there was still a lot of despair, a lot of hurt, a lot of turmoil. And she, too, decided to take her own life. Her mom had actually shown up at her door because they had planned on going to church together that day. And mom knocked and knocked and knocked, and Tammy never opened. So the mom called a family member who then came over to go inside the house, and there they found her on the floor. You know, life brings every one of us a lot of tragedy, a lot of trials, a lot of difficulties that we're all going to go through. And I've come to realize that trials are a lot like earthquakes. They have different magnitudes. There are some that are going to rattle your life just a little bit. Not so much that, you know, your life is thrown into turmoil, just enough to shake you a little bit, but it soon passes, and honestly, after a while, you forgot all about it. But there are other things that are going to happen in your life that are going to shake you to the core. They're not soon forgotten. There are certain things that are going to happen in every one of our lives that are going to bring us to that breaking point that we don't think that we can handle anymore. And I know some of you know what I'm talking about because you're in that spot right now. You're in a spot in your own life where you don't know where to turn. You don't know what's going to happen next. All you know is that you are right in the middle of just absolute bedlam. Well, here in this chapter, we are reading the words of David, who obviously is going through a very difficult time. This is one of those earthquake-type moments in his life. And we know that David faced a lot of turmoil throughout his lifetime. We read about it in the book of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, many things that happened in his life. But evidently, when he wrote this psalm, there was something really going wrong in his life, something that he was facing. Now, we're not really sure exactly what that was. What's interesting about the Psalms is that there are many Psalms that actually tell us before the text of the Psalm exactly the occasion of why the Psalm is being written. In fact, if you were just to turn back a few pages, you can turn to Psalm 57, and you'll notice before the text of the Psalm, it'll actually tell us when it was that David was writing that Psalm. It was during the time that he was fleeing for his life, from King Saul, and David was actually hiding in caves at that time in order to avoid King Saul putting him to death. At the beginning of Psalm 18, we're actually told that David wrote that psalm on the day that God had delivered him from those threats of King Saul. And then Psalm 51, it tells us that David wrote that after his sin with Bathsheba had been exposed. But when we turn to Psalm 61, it doesn't tell us exactly when it was that David wrote that. But there are some clues, I believe, in the psalm itself that give us an idea of possibly when David might have written these words. The first thing I want you to know, and it's probably pretty obvious to all of us, is that David is going through a very difficult time when he wrote this. When my heart is overwhelmed are the words that he actually used. So obviously, David is going through an overwhelming time in his life. So we know he's struggling. Secondly, though, if you look at verse 6, it says that David makes the statement, you will prolong the king's life. So evidently, David was reigning as the king at that particular time because he's speaking about himself. So it's a time that David was in tremendous despair. It's a time that David was reigning as the king. But it also appears to be a time that David was not in Jerusalem at that time. Because near the beginning of the psalm, he says, from the ends of the earth, I will cry to you. Well, Jerusalem was David's home. But to make a statement like that kind of indicates to us that David was not in Jerusalem at the time. He's like crying out to God somewhere beyond Jerusalem, from the ends of the earth. Now, you put all of that together, David is in despair. He's the king of Israel, but he's not in Jerusalem at the time. And there's one instance in David's life that I think really reflects that picture. And that is the time that he was actually fleeing from Jerusalem because his own son Absalom was trying to set himself up as king in place of his dad. In fact, he was actually had rallied some men around him with the attempt to take David's life. And David literally had to flee from Jerusalem along with many of the men in his army in order to escape what Absalom was doing. It was a coup against his own dad. Now, David had faced betrayal many times before. This betrayal was probably not that new to David. But it had never happened from somebody that was in his own family. Here was his own flesh and blood, someone who was within his own household. A boy that he had raised is now turning his back on his dad, threatening his dad's life, trying to usurp his dad's authority, take his dad's crown. And you got to imagine that would have been just absolutely devastating to David. Not only that, but in the midst of David fleeing for his life, ultimately, Absalom was overcome so that David could reclaim the throne. But in the process, David's commander, Joab, put Absalom to death. And so before David even had an opportunity to reconcile his relationship with his son, that son is now dead. And he has no opportunity to get things right with his own boy. It is at that time that I personally believe is when he decided to write Psalm 61. His son has rebelled against him. His son threatened his life. His son tried to take his throne. And even though David got the throne back, he lost his son in the process and was never given the opportunity to heal that relationship. Some of you guys know what that feels like because you've gone through it in your own family, in your own life. It might have happened with a son or a daughter, a dad or a mom, a sibling. But something has happened where those relationships have been torn apart. Maybe they're torn apart right now. Maybe you feel at this point that it's irreconcilable. Or maybe that person is even no longer here, and so you don't even have the opportunity to heal that relationship. Maybe it's a marriage relationship or some other relationship that at one point was a bond of love, but has just been ripped apart. I want you to have that in mind when you consider how David was feeling when he wrote this psalm. And that brings us to the first few verses when he says this, "Hear my cry, O God. Attend to my prayer. From the ends of the earth, I will cry to you. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I." Now, I want to dispel a common belief that is within Christianity in regards to a statement that, honestly, I used to say to other people, and I still today, I hear Christians exchange this statement a lot with one another. And that is simply this: God will never give you more than you can handle. I would bet that every one of us in here has either said that to somebody, or at least we have heard somebody say it. God will never give you more than you can handle. I want to tell you right now that I honestly don't believe that that's true. In fact, I can't find anywhere in Scripture that it actually tells us that God will not give us more than we can handle. I do think I know where it comes from. There's a verse in 1 Corinthians 10:13. When we're told that no temptation has seized you except such as is common to man. And God is faithful and will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. That's very true. But that's talking about temptations. Temptations and trials are not the same thing. A temptation is something that is trying to lure you into committing a sin, trying to get you to fall. Trials are not the same thing. Trials are those things that come against our life to attack our life, and we all face trials on a regular basis, some more severe, some a little bit less severe, but they're not the same thing as temptations. And while God will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, he does not give us the same assurance that we will not be tried beyond what we are able. And let me tell you why I think that that distinction is very important. Because if you have the mentality that God is never going to give you more than you can handle, then when you face a trial, you're going to try and handle it. You understand what I'm saying? When you think that God's not going to give you more than you can handle yourself, when you are faced with a trial, you try and figure out a way. Okay, God's not going to, you know, give me more than I can handle. That means he thinks that I can handle this, so I'm going to try and handle it. But when you have the perspective that he might give you more than you can handle, but you also have the understanding that there is nothing that he can't handle, that when you go through that trial that is more than you can handle, where do you run to? To the one who can handle it. You see, I believe that God sometimes does give us things that are more than we can handle. In fact, that is really what that word overwhelmed means. David specifically uses the word, when my heart is overwhelmed. When his heart was overwhelmed, which was a word that meant to be covered over. I mean, we all have been up to our necks in trials. But what David is talking about is not just being up to your neck in trials. He's talking about my trial is over my head. It means to completely cover. That's the word that David chose. He felt like he was overpowered by the circumstances that he was in at that particular time. Now, if he had the mentality that God won't give me more than I can handle, then he probably would have tried to handle it himself. But because he realized he was in over his head, is what overwhelmed means, he knew that he had to run somewhere where he was going to get the help that he needed. And that help was going to be in the arms of the Lord. In fact, it's part of the reason why I think that when Paul said in Philippians 4:13, I can do all things because God told me he'll never give me more than I can handle. Is that what it says? No. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You see, Paul even knew there might be something that is bigger than me, but there isn't anything that I'm going to face that is bigger than my God. And that is why when David was overwhelmed, he knew where to run to. In fact, that's exactly what it says. When my heart, verse 2, is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. David's life was unsettled, so what he wanted is to be able to stand upon something that was not movable. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Now, I know a lot of you are probably familiar with a beach up in Newport. The very southern part of Newport Beach is a section called the Wedge. If you haven't heard of it, you probably should know that this is a section of beach that has earned its name because of the size of the waves that are generated there oftentimes when there is a southern swell. The Wedge is an area that is very popular with surfers, with bodyboarders, because the size of the waves during a south swell can reach up to about 30 feet. Huge waves. And in fact, many people have been injured. Many people have even died at that beach because they have been overwhelmed by the surf that is there. But right to the south of those waves is a rock jetty that just jets off out into the ocean. And you know what? No matter how big those waves get at the Wedge, those rocks that are pounded by these waves day in and day out, 24 hours a day, do not move. Now, if you're in the water and those waves are throwing your body around like a cork in the water, you can easily be overcome. But I tell you what, you stand upon one of those rocks on the jetty. When those waves crash, the rock doesn't even vibrate. And those rocks are no bigger than a Volkswagen, maybe even half the size. Imagine what David is referring to when he says, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. But notice too that David isn't just talking about any old rock. He doesn't say, lead me to a rock He says, lead me to the rock. He had a specific rock in mind, that rock being the Lord himself. And here's the thing, a lot of times when our life is shifting, when we don't feel like we're on stable ground because of our circumstances, we are desperate to find something that is not moving. And a lot of times we will reach out to any old rock, any old thing that we feel like is going to give us a little bit of security, a little bit of stability. So when your marriage is on the rocks, literally shaking, you try and find some person, somebody that's going to give you a little bit of stability. And so you're just reaching out to any old rock. When other things in your life are in turmoil, a lot of times any old rock will do. But that was not true for David. David said, I have one rock in mind, and it's not any old rock's going to do. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. In fact, I love what David even wrote in Psalm 18, because here he says the rock. In Psalm 18, you can read it there, I believe it's in verse 2, where he says that the Lord is my rock and my refuge. He took ownership of who the Lord was in his life. You see, for many people, they understand that the Lord is the rock. But is he your rock? You see, there's a difference between having the understanding that, okay, I know that God is strong, God is powerful, he is bigger than the situation that I happen to be in. He is the rock, but is he your rock? David not only was reaching for any old rock, he was reaching for one rock specifically, the rock. But not only was it the rock, it was his rock. The Lord was his rock. And he stood upon that rock. Notice this too, though. David did not say in his prayer here, Lord, lift me to the rock that is higher than I. He said, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. And there's a subtle, but I think it's a really important difference between those two. You see, a lot of times when we're in bad circumstances, we want the Lord to lift us out of those circumstances. Am I right? I mean, when your life is in turmoil, you got a lot going on, you want God to take you out of that situation. So your prayer might be, oh, Lord, lift me out of this situation. Bring me out of this and set me upon yourself. Lift me to that rock that is higher than I. But that's not what David said. David said, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Here's the difference. To be lifted requires nothing on your part. To be led requires obedience. To ask God to lift you out of your situation doesn't mean you're going to learn anything from that situation. And God is always using the trials in our life to teach us the things that he wants us to know. And so David didn't say, lift me out of this situation, Lord. He said, lead me out of this situation. You know, in John 10, Jesus identifies himself as our good shepherd. And he says, my sheep know my voice, and they follow me. It's interesting that Jesus called himself the good shepherd. He didn't say, I'm the good cowboy. Because the cowboy drives the cattle. Cowboy gets behind the cattle, drives the cattle where he wants the cattle to go. But that's not what the shepherd does. The shepherd goes out in front of the sheep. His voice speaks to the sheep, and the sheep follow their shepherd. And when the sheep follow the lead of their shepherd, didn't David say in Psalm 23 that he's going to lead them beside the still waters? He's going to restore their soul. David wasn't looking just for God to lift him out of the situation, but he was looking for the Lord to lead him out of this situation. God, you lead, and I'm going to follow. When we get down to verse 3, he says this, for you have been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy. I want you to notice, first of all, that what David is saying here is in the past tense. For you have been. What he's beginning to think about in his moment of need is how God has been so faithful to him in the past. God, you have been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy. I want to show you a picture that I actually have in my office at home. I've had it for years, and the first time that I saw this picture, I thought, I gotta have that. And many of you might have seen this picture before, but it was taken of a lighthouse off the coast of France when a raging storm was just pounding that lighthouse. And you might even notice that there is a guy standing there in the doorway while this wave is beginning to overwhelm that lighthouse. And the first time I saw that picture, I thought, what in the world is that guy thinking? Standing right there. I mean, that is the last place that I want to be when that wave is crashing against that lighthouse. But you see, that guy's a lighthouse keeper. And he's probably weathered a lot of storms in that lighthouse. This is not the first storm he has faced. It's not the first wave that he has had to weather crashing against that lighthouse. But what he has learned over the process of time is that no matter how big the wave, that lighthouse is not moving. So I can step outside and I can watch the show. And I don't have to worry about my life, because as soon as I step back inside, I am safe. And that's a picture I get when David says, you have been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy. In fact, when I got this picture and hung it on my wall, I put below it a verse out of Proverbs chapter 18, verse 10. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it and are safe. You see, David understood that God was his source of refuge and that he had been his source of refuge even in the past, because by using the past tense, what David is saying basically is this, is that, God, I know that I'm in a bad situation right now, but I remember how faithful you have been to me in the past. And David, even in the scriptures, he tells a story of when he was a shepherd boy. And there was a time that he was out tending to his sheep, and there was a lion that came after his father's sheep. And God gave him victory over that lion. And on another occasion, there was a bear that came to attack the sheep, and God allowed David to overpower that bear. And then he was given victory over Goliath. We all know the story. And then later, when King Saul was breathing down his neck, trying to kill David because he knew that David was to be the next king of Israel, God gave him victory over that king as well. Over and over and over again, God had proved himself faithful to David in the past. So at this point in his life, when he is in the midst of turmoil, his heart is breaking, he's overwhelmed, what he does is he turns his eyes to how faithful that God has been to him in the past. And let me tell you, if you're going through a really difficult time right now, do not forget how faithful God has been to you in the past. The very fact that you are here tonight is evidence that God is good to you. He is faithful. He will bring you through whatever your situation is now. You see, one of our problems, though, is this, is that a lot of times when we're in the midst of a trial, we might be reminded of how faithful God has been in the past, but in our head, we're thinking, yeah, but this is different. I mean, that was something understandable. God could get me out of that. But this situation I'm in right now, this is different. I don't know that God can do this. You know, I think Israel had that problem. When we see how Moses was leading them out of their slavery in Egypt to eventually bring them into the promised land, over and over and over again, God showed himself faithful to his people. But like clockwork, they, at each time, began to doubt that God could get them through the next thing. I mean, we remember when Moses came to them and said, hey, God spoke to me. He said that he's going to let you go. He's going to overpower Pharaoh, and we're all going to a much better place. And they didn't believe Moses. They turned their backs on Moses. They criticized Moses. But then they saw the faithfulness of God as the 10 plagues are poured out upon Pharaoh and the Egyptians so that they get their freedom. But then they're up against the Red Sea, and the Egyptian army is coming after them. And immediately they forget the faithfulness of God. And Moses is there saying, hey, you know what? The God that got you out of Egypt, he's going to carry you through. Oh, Moses, but this is different. Okay, I understand that. God could do that stuff. But what are we going to do now? Our backs up are back against the Red Sea. Are there not enough graves in Egypt that you brought us out here to die? And then God was faithful, splitting the Red Sea. But they weren't even on the other side for very long before they started getting hungry. And they started crying out to Moses. Moses, we're hungry. There's no food out here. Well, don't you remember how faithful God was in getting you through the Red Sea and destroying the Egyptian army? Yeah, but that was different. This is completely different. I don't think that God can do it here. And then God provides them the manna from heaven. And not long after that, they get thirsty. And again, they cry out to Moses. They forget the faithfulness of God in the past because it's different. And then they get on the border of the promised land. And Moses sends in the spies. And most of the spies come back with the bad report saying, hey, you know what? It is great land, just like God promised. But there's big dudes there. They're much bigger than we are. There's no way we can take it. They would overpower us in a second. Forgetting the faithfulness of God in the past, they doubted God in the present. And because of that, God said, you know what? Here's what's going to happen. Because you don't believe me, you're going to do 40 years of laps here in this wilderness until you all die out and your kids are going to go into the land that I promised. We need to understand that God is faithful. He's been faithful in the past. He's going to be faithful today. He's going to be faithful in the future. Now, I don't know what you're facing right now. I don't know what you got going on in your life, but I'm betting in a crowd this size that there are a good handful of us that right now are in that place where we're feeling like, God, I don't see any way out. My heart is overwhelmed. I don't know how you can rescue me from this circumstance, this situation. I don't think my heart could ever be whole again. Do not forget how faithful God has been to you in the past. And if he has been so faithful, so loving, so gracious to you in the past, do you not think that whatever you're facing today, he will be faithful to get you through? I want you to notice a couple things about this psalm. And if you have your own Bible and you happen to have a pen or a pencil, I'm going to ask that you would underline or circle some things that I'm going to point out to you. Particularly if I'm using the New King James Version, but if you've got New King James or King James, I believe even the NIV words it pretty similar. Some other versions might word it a little bit differently. But I want you to see a few things that are written here, because David, in verse 2, he says these three words. He says, I will cry. From the ends of the earth, I will cry to you. But then if you look down at verse 8, at the end of the psalm, he says this, so I will sing. You can circle or underline those words. I will sing. I will sing praise to your name forever, that I may daily perform my vows. You notice something? David, at the beginning of the psalm, is crying. But at the end of the psalm, he's singing. Crying at the beginning, singing at the end. You know, a lot of times I believe that we, in our status of being overwhelmed, we are crying. Our heart is broken, we are crying out to God. But somehow we never get to the singing part. We never get to the point where we're singing praises to God again because we're so stuck in the crying part. We cry over our circumstances, our heart is breaking over our circumstances, we can't see beyond our circumstances, we can't even seem to get our eyes back on the Lord because of what it is that we're going through. We're just broken, we're overwhelmed. And we stay in that place of crying, we never get to the singing part. David was able to get to the singing part, but how did he do it? I want you to look at verse 4. In verse 4, there are two other things that he says. The beginning of verse 4, I will abide. I will abide in your tabernacle forever. You can circle those words or underline the words, I will abide. And then the second part of the same verse, verse 4, I will trust. I will trust in the shelter of your wings. Here's the secret that David found out. How do you go from crying to singing, abiding, and trusting? Many people, I believe, never get to the singing part again because they can't leave the crying. But the only way to leave the crying is to abide. Abide in the Lord. The word abide simply means to remain. It means you put yourself in the place where God can be your shelter, where God can be your protector, where God can be that tower, that high rock that is going to get you beyond your circumstances. And trust is staying in that place, trusting that in God's promise that he is never going to leave you nor forsake you. And if you're in the situation right now where you're just overwhelmed, you're crying, you're in that state of crying, understand this, it is okay to be in that state for a moment. But God wants to bring you to, again, that place of singing. The only way, though, to get to singing is to pass through abiding and trusting. There's some of you here tonight that I know that this message is for. It's for you. God is wanting to speak to your heart tonight because he loves you and he wants you to have a reminder that in the midst of your turmoil, in the midst of your heart being overwhelmed, even right now, he is faithful. And he wants to bring you from crying to singing again. But if you want to sing again, you need to abide in him. You need to trust him. Let's pray.